Very good morning to you, David Abramson, psychologist in private practice, joining me in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Howard. Good morning, Zanati.
Morning.
David, speaking about forewarned and forearmed, let's talk about the difficult subject of medicating our children. And we know that there's a massive increase in the number of kids that are on various forms of medication, which includes the Ritalins and Concertas of the world, as well as anti-anxiety medication. How much of it is warranted? How do we know if it is warranted? How do we know when to make the decision? What age should we be looking out for that? Tell us everything, Donnie.
Howard, it's such an important topic to talk about because I get and I speak to colleagues and this is something that comes up so often, you know, when parents are faced with a recommendation to medicate their child or their adolescent, it's a very, very serious decision because you are giving them medication, which obviously one needs a prescription for. And often there are potential side effects. So I think maybe if we start at the beginning, and you know, and I think the beginning point is when a child or an adolescent, for example, has a difficulty. And I think where we do run into problems is where I think the GP or you know a doctor of some sort is the first port of call. And again, it might sound a little bit biased coming from a psychologist, but without a child seeing a psychologist or a social worker to try and understand where these symptoms are coming from. Mm. Because it's not, you know, as human beings, it's not so clear. If a child is not concentrating in class, for example, we can assume immediately that the child has got attention deficit and then put them onto a Ritalin or Concerta. Mm. But you know, again, it could quite easily be that the child is feeling very anxious and is distracted by his or her thoughts.
Anxiety, yeah.
So I think that, you know, the important thing is that medication is not and shouldn't be the first port of call unless it is extreme situations where, you know, where a child is when I say suicidal, they are they're wanting to take their lives. They are
right. When it's patently obvious.
Absolutely.
But at what age, you know, this is always my worry as well, is you see these 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds and they're literally swinging from the light fittings. And just because one child might not have done that, does this mean that the second one has a problem? And how young should we start being aware that there could be a problem, let's say, with hyperactivity?
Mm. Well, it's another whole discussion around our education system, because I think we have generally one education system, and if you can't fit into that education system, then what do teachers do? And in some ways, I feel for them, for teachers who need to follow a syllabus, who need to, you know, go from A to Z at the end of the, by the end of the year. And if you do have a child or children who are not concentrating, who are hyperactive and maybe disrupting the class, what do they do? Now, the obvious answer is they need to put in the effort and they need to try and help the child adapt without medication, putting them in front, allowing them to stand, sending them on errands around the school. So I think, you know, that is definitely the first port of call. Again, you know, looking at the child as an individual and adapting and trying to help the child.
Is there an age below which you say, look, we're not even looking at this?
Oh, it's very controversial, very. And I think for me personally, we've got to be very careful to be prescribing medication to children in nursery school, for example, which does happen. I think that's very, very controversial. Mm. But I do think for me we need to follow the steps very carefully. And the first port of call would be, I believe, to see a psychologist, see a social worker, and try and understand what is happening for that child. And not only for the child, but maybe what's happening in that system, in that family system, to, you know, that these symptoms are presenting. And if one hasn't done that, then I think it is irresponsible, you know, to just go onto medication. And I think the other thing is important to say is there are amazing general practitioners and specialists, without a doubt. But I think it's important that if a child or adolescent, even an adult, is going onto psychiatric medication, that they see a psychiatrist. And the reason for this is that psychiatric medication, and this might sound controversial. It's not a science, I would say. You know, we're not at the place where we know exactly what's going to work for who at what dosage. But psychiatrists work with these medications day in and day out. And so they have a lot more experience when it comes to these things. So, you know, I think, and again, they're very much more aware of the side effects that can arise and that need to be watched very, very closely for.
So, so you have an issue with your child, or you're starting to see that there's something going on. Maybe the child can't concentrate, they certainly can't do homework. Your first thing that you need to do is to take that child for an assessment, go to a psychologist?
Go to a psychologist. The psychologist would take a very thorough history about, right, about your child, about, but not only about the child, about the family. What is going? Has there been any serious changes? Has there been any traumas in the family? And really just try and understand if they're the cause of these difficulties.
One of my concerns is that because it's so controversial, people are very, very strongly opinionated on this. So if you page through my newsfeed on Facebook, you will see people saying, you know, outrageous, you know, that our kids are medicated, you know, all they need to drink is cod liver oil every day, four times a day, and you'll see that, you know, it's magic, and everybody's coming up with different things, and others are saying, well, you know, it's irresponsible not to medicate. You know, people are so, and my concern is that our practitioners, including our psychologists, are also people, with a strong, because we've all got strong biases, we've all got strong experiences, and maybe you had a case, not you, but a psychologist had a case where maybe one of their children needed it and they did put it on and didn't, and therefore that becomes part of your personal experience and bias. I know that in theory, we're all meant to be absolutely professional. I'm meant to be able to sit here and have this conversation with you very, very objectively, but I've got five children, of which some of them have been medicated with Concerta and these types of things. We've had good experiences and bad experiences. So I've got my own approach to it. I find there's so much noise, I guess, is what I'm saying. There's noise and there's bias. How do we try and remove that in order to make the best decision for our child?
Well, I think that's the point, is to make the best decision for your child. And I think, you know, very importantly, you know, I think psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers hopefully are aware that they come in with their own experiences and their own opinions. But it's very, very so important for us as professionals to be aware of those and to really try and put those aside. And very importantly, look at the child and also respect the opinion of the parents. Often it can be a process. So if a parent, I've had parents come in and say that the medication is not on the table. Absolutely not. And, you know, one needs to respect that and then follow a process.
Well, do you? Do you need to respect that?
I think in many ways.
I mean, imagine going to a doctor and saying, you know what, yes, so I've got high blood pressure, but please understand, I'm never going on medication. Well, okay, but then you're going to die probably from a stroke or a heart attack. So yes, it might be your decision, but do we need to respect that, or do we need to convince and say, explain why, you know, and change that view, because it's actually incorrect?
Well, often it's the process that changes that view. It's about eliminating, as we say, going through the less evasive things first. And I think then there is a point where once one has tried many, many practical things, from diet, for example, to exercise, to speaking to the teacher, to, you know, the child going maybe needing OT for, you know, for sensory issues, whatever it might be, that we get to a point where everything is tried and there is no progress. And, you know, so I believe in really following the process, because often the process then answers the question for us. Well, what do we have left? We've tried everything. We've tried to understand everything. We've the child's in certain amount of therapies. You know, maybe we need to give medication a trial, and that's so important.
Because you can reverse it. I mean, it's not forever.
It's not.
It doesn't have to be.
And if you try a medication, you know, I often have parents who were anti-medication at times go, why didn't we do this sooner? Because there actually needs to be a wow effect. There needs to be, I always believe that.
It's interesting that I absolutely agree. And as somebody who takes Concerta, and I take Concerta every day, I can tell you that the first time I started taking, the first time I was prescribed and needed this was after my trauma, after my second attack, my second criminal attack, when I was attacked. And I went to a psychiatrist and she said to me that, and because my ADD was, had just almost like exploded. And, she said, you know, give this a try. Let's try a lower dose. Mm-hmm. Let's see if it works. And I was coming in, I was on a trip overseas and I wasn't going to try it until I was back in Johannesburg. And, I recall so clearly being on a plane and, we were landing at OR Tambo and I had a meeting at the airport because some people were leaving, coming, whatever, et cetera. And I thought, well, now's a good time to try it when we were landing. And I took this medication and I actually felt like the fog cleared, the curtains came up and my vision was clear. It was one of the most profound moments, because I could actually feel the difference. And that's what we've sort of been told, and I realize is the case. If it isn't doing that, if you don't see that tangible difference, let's say with a Concerta or a Ritalin, then it isn't doing, then it isn't there to do, it isn't doing what it needs to do.
Absolutely. I support that 120%. I mean, when you're taking, such serious medication, you don't want to and ah and think, you know, is it helping? Is it not helping? Then we know that this is not really the medication that is, you know, suited for you. It's not optimal. And that's why I say with respect to psychiatry, you know, that it's new. It's relatively new. And it's not that we can identify exactly what works for who at what dose. And that's why I would say that it's, you're not committing to a medication, if one decides to take it. One needs to evaluate. It's on trial. You need to see, if you're having side effects. And that needs to be monitored very carefully by your psychiatrist. But very much so, it needs to be a, well, okay, I can clearly see the benefit of taking this.
And science says, I'm anti-meds. I was placed on it as a kid, as I could not cope. And after school, because meds were stopped, I found other drugs that almost destroyed my life. But that's interesting because actually isn't that exactly the opposite? Isn't that an argument for meds?
Well, that's what, you know, that is. And often what happens is that, you know, for example, young children who experience very high levels of anxiety, and there have been numerous studies about this, children who experience extremely high levels of anxiety who are not medicated, when they get to adolescence, tend to find substances like alcohol, drugs, and they feel less anxious. And so they, instead of going onto a medication which is controlled, which is monitored by a professional, they self-medicate. And often we see children becoming addicted to drugs because they haven't been medicated. So, yeah, so it is unusual.
And science says, how long would you give to see if meds are working?
Well, again, it's
a great question.
It is. And I think for me, we should bring a psychiatrist onto the show who deals with medication. But generally, you know, certain medications like Ritalin and Concerta, you know, do start working immediately. And one could start seeing almost, over the first few days whether this is going to have a positive effect or not, or if you're going to also experience side effects.
Yeah.
But the medications like for depression and anxiety, do take time to work and build up in the, you know, in one's system. And one talks about reaching therapeutic dose where we say, okay, it should be working, or depression should be alleviated, your anxiety should be down. So it does vary from, you know, different types of medication. And so I think that is also the frustration with certain medications, is that one does have to invest some time in allowing yourself to build it up into one's system and seeing if it's going to work. While the Ritalins and the Concertas are.
Should be immediate. Well, the other thing just to add is, this advice came from you some years ago when one of our kids was incredibly, incredibly anxious. And the comment that you made at the time was, it's very difficult to do other work because the level of anxiety is so high. So we did try medication, brought the anxiety down, and worked still with a psychologist to now do the work that needed to be done emotionally to try and get to a better space.
Such an important point, because, you know, if we look at...
It's not one or the other.
Absolutely. And often they work so well in tandem. Mm. And what we, if we had to evaluate levels of anxiety, for example, 0 to 10, as always like to do, you know, if you're going to take a child or even an adolescent or an adult into therapy who has got, and that's where the evaluation comes in, is having panic attacks, a 9 or 10 out of 10 anxiety levels, it's going to be very, very difficult, almost I would say impossible, for therapy to work, because one needs that window of opportunity, that crack, that light at the end of the tunnel to be able to say, hang on a second, I'm going to now be able to, in this moment of anxiety, to use the skills that I have from therapy. So often that does happen, is that one goes on to medication, then, and the therapy becomes so much more effective. One has corrective emotional experiences, one builds confidence, and then one can come off the medication. So again, it's not a lifelong commitment.
Time is 8:28. I'm Howard Feldman, and I'm chatting to David Abramson. He is a psychologist in a private practice. We're talking about medication. Mike says, I fully believe that kids are over-medicated because of pharmaceutical companies advertising and driving monetary goals, and mainly because the environment has not changed to meet the changing child and the behavior brought about by TV, PlayStation, cell phones, social media, etc. Mm. Also, chemical additives to food are highly disruptive. In my personal experience, says Mike, a GP put my son onto antidepressant along with Ritalin without a one-on-one analysis. That's appalling. I'm sorry. Yeah. That is absolutely appalling.
It's unethical, but basically. You know what?
I don't want to, you can't soft step around this. That is, to put any person onto this type of medication without a consultation is appalling.
It's unethical. And I think for me, the important thing is that absolutely, I do think for me that we are over-medicating our children. And I think it, you know, again, we need to be very reticent and careful when doing it. But I think also it's important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Know when there's a place for it.
And just to clarify, you know, when I said that you don't have to be on medication forever, yeah, with certain serious psychiatric illnesses, maybe like schizophrenia, bipolar mood disorder, that's a different story. Mm. But there are definitely situations where medication is not a lifelong commitment.
All right. Ivana says methylphenidate, i.e. Ritalin, is a very serious medication. Absolutely. A very, very serious one indeed. And that's why I absolutely believe, as does David, that, and you've heard that here, have the proper assessment. Make sure that that this is prescribed by a psychiatrist and that you follow process.
But what I also want to say is it's important to involve a whole team, and that includes the teacher. It's so important. I mean, your child, it seems very logical, but often it's not done, is that information needs to be have, meetings needs to be had at schools to understand the, you know, the teacher's perspective, and to have, you know, we have things called the Connors forms and a few other kind of checklists that I think are very, very useful for teachers to fill out, and they, I think, essentially need to be involved in the process. Mm-hmm. So it's a serious medication, and can have, especially as we know, Ritalin and Concerta takes appetite away, which is a serious side effect for a child, and can clearly be worked around if it can be of great benefit for, you know, to the child.
Janine says, my husband was seeing a psychiatrist for adult ADD. The psychiatrist insisted he take Dexedrine, which he himself brought into the country. My husband ended up addicted to amphetamine. She does give the name of the doctor. Janine, I'm not going to read out the name of the doctor, but wow, very, very scary indeed. And Ian says, rubbish. Johnny Miller was the first winner of the $1 million. Louis has been consuming too much Johnny Walker. Time is 8:36.